This podcast is being recorded at Douglas College in New Westminster, British Columbia, which is located on the unceded traditional and ancestral territories of the Kakait and Kwikwetlem First Nations. We are fortunate to be able to gather on this territory of the Coast Salish peoples, where we honor their welcome and graciousness to the students who seek knowledge here. Thank you.
Welcome to SHIFT, Let's Talk. In our third edition, we have Dr. Kate Boyer. She's a senior lecturer in feminist geography in the School of Geography and Planning at Cardiff University. Thank you for joining me today, Kate. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me, Anna.
Okay, so I'm Anna Brito, and this is part of the Impacts series. Today, we'll be talking about geography, space, and power. So I've been reading your paper that's called What's a Girl Like You Doing in a Place Like This? A Geography of Sexual Violence in Early 20th Century Vancouver. You wrote that in 1996, right?
Yes, that's right.
And it's been published online in 2013. I've been reading it. It's lovely. I highly recommend people to read this. I loved it. So do you want to talk about it a little bit, give us a short snippet or what's about?
Sure, yeah. So I wrote that paper. I had just come to Vancouver to do my master's in human geography at UBC. And at that time, I basically just felt like there just hasn't been at that point that much scholarship in geography about sexual harassment or sexual violence. And so I decided to take that on, and I was just encouraged to do that, considered, you know, to do that as a historical project. As at that time, I was able to get into the BC archives and to look at legal records to see how, and basically to see how the Crown prosecution was using how place played into court cases to try to position women as basically kind of more or less virtuous based on where they had been when they had been attacked. So yeah, it was an absolutely fascinating project, and I'm really glad to have been able to have the chance to do that. So I'm glad you liked it.
Yeah, it's great, because the previous podcast we were talking with Sarah, how place has a meaning, and that meaning also carries a lot of power. So it's really interesting to take a look at how all the things relate to each other. And as we discussed, there's some spaces or places that are defined as feminine, and some are defined more as masculine, right? Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that goes, you know, that's just this very, very old binary that goes right back to sort of, you know, in the emergence of industrial capitalism and the sort of emergence of this gender binary of coding of spaces and public and private. And, you know, we have these very sort of old notions about kind of the cult of domesticity and, you know, the domestic goddess. And, you know, in the first instance, these were very much sort of set up as middle class goals or middle class aspirations that then, you know, sort of over time became, as these things do, goals or aspirations, you know, for all. And those that weren't, you know, women that were doing something different were, you know, were seen as being out of place or whatever. So, you know, despite all the ways in which things have progressed and rights and, you know, freedoms have expanded over the last 100 years or so, you know, still in the back of, you know, sort of washing around in our cultural lexicon, I guess, we still have these kind of echoes of these long shadows of norms about these binarized notions of where men and women belong. So it's amazing to me, you know, now here we are in this moment, and, you know, you sort of think, gosh, even these notions of binary notions of gender themselves just seem so outdated and so quaint and old fashioned, yeah. Really, that, nevertheless, stunningly, we still do have, you know, this kind of women's places in the home. We have that right alongside, you know, expanded beliefs and, you know, around sort of trans rights and, you know, questioning the gender binary. They're both kind of existing side by side. So, yeah, interesting times.
Yeah, totally. So in your article and what you're saying right now is you're making really clear that these gendered ideas, they don't stand alone, but they have consequences, right? They're outcomes of these gendered ideas. So in your paper, for example, you mentioned you were transcribing some trials and how if these women that were on trial were partying or they were in bars or they were clubbing or whatever, they were not seen as respectable individuals, right?
Yeah.
So that has, those gender ideas have a lot of impact in law and politics. So do you think that still happens today? Do you think that still the place defines the, let's say, the respectability or not of a woman? Or
yeah, I mean, I would say depressingly, I do still think that plagues a lot of cultures. I'm here, I'm actually sort of living and working in the UK, but you know, working with undergraduates and students, and I do find, you know, talking, I teach like a gender, place and space third year university class, and you know, by talking to my students, like, you know, they're clearly, although a lot of progress has been made, you can still find evidence of a belief of sort of, well, what was she doing there anyway? And why was she so drunk? And, you know, really kind of shockingly to me, a real kind of active victim blaming culture that still does kind of persist. And then, as you say, you know, speaking about the ways that, you know, cyberspace and the internet have expanded, these have created, you know, massive new kinds of fora and spaces that are not governable in the same way as our current legal systems, you know, in the UK or in Canada are really equipped to do. So, you know, issues, say, that Laura Bates has recently written about, you know, not just of kind of trolling or hate speech, but in fact sites that are in fact grooming boys, you know, towards misogyny and towards gender terrorism. So some very frightening things that I think the law really needs to figure out we as a society need to figure out how to combat some of these trends through legal mechanisms and cultural mechanisms as well.
That's really interesting that you mentioned law, because your paper has a historic point of view, because you've been studying the Victorian era, right? Mostly.
Yeah, well, the early 20th century, so tail end of Victorian and Edwardian, I guess, but yeah.
So it's really interesting to see how things played along back in time, and now that still carries a legacy, as to say. And you mentioned the online realm, which is really interesting, because there's still a lot of sexual harassment going on, and there's a lot of like victim blaming. I've been doing some research on this, and the things you see there is just like, well, look, she was in a bikini, or look, she was showing off her body. So she kind of was looking for those comments, or she was looking for those messages. And it seems to be like what you were writing in this paper, you can compare to that, right? It's just like, well, she was at night in a bar or on the streets, so she was looking for it. Oh, she was, now she's posting a picture and she doesn't have, I don't know, pants, or she's wearing shorts or whatever, so she's kind of looking for that. And unless we have laws or policies that can work around that stuff, I think nothing's going to change much, right?
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And I think that's absolutely right. And you know, culturally, it's interesting too, if, you know, we've got the sort of in the cultural backdrop, you know, the kind of you know, over the last, maybe the last 20 years, a kind of hyper-gendering of bodies, of people, of messages about how, you know, how gendered subjects should be, you know, everything from, you know, the gendering of infant clothing and toys, you know, right up through kind of hyper-gender movements, I guess, or hyper, you know, hyper-binarized genders, and, you know, in which you can think of sort of celebrity culture, but this sort of impulse to make you know, the binarized gender, you know, system, you know, making women and men kind of even more, you know, even farther from each other, more different, more exotic, more other. And you kind of wonder if this, you know, if this plays a role, if this could play a role as well in terms of trying, you know, the sort of, you know, reification or calcification of the gender binary itself.
Good. So you told me that you've been doing some research again on geographies of sexual violence. So do you think that's been, what did you find? Is there anything new? Is people taking care of this subject? What did you find? What are you working on right now?
Okay, yeah. So right now, I mean, I guess the spur for this project really was, you know, again, and just in speaking to my students and speaking to my tutees and the students that I teach, I was really troubled and shocked, frankly, I guess, to learn about, you know, just kind of the ways that their experiences of going out of a night, going out to a nightclub, and by their reporting, at least in the UK, you know, experiences of groping, for example, are almost completely kind of normalized. They're to be expected in a way that, you know, for me in the mid-90s in Western Canada or Quebec, that would have been very shocking and very unacceptable. And so that's really worrying, I guess, as I suppose we all would like to believe this narrative of, you know, things are getting better, everything's getting better over time. So to feel that over the course of a generation, maybe things were getting worse for young women, that really sort of spurred me to action, to want to explore what might be being done in this. So, my work, it really builds on the work of some other great work in this field, the work of some scholars here in the UK, Alison Phipps and Ruth Lewis, Laura Bates's work in, you know, the popular press about everyday sexism, but really about trying to respond to that, to see, okay, what work is being done to try to counteract, you know, sexual violence, and to kind of try to bring forth more positive gender cultures. So in that light, I've been exploring consent workshops, really as a form of feminist activism, and sort of what people's experiences are, how they create spaces where you know, sort of proper listening can take place, where people can hear things they may not have heard in terms of understanding what it is to experience, you know, sexual harassment on a really regular basis, which, as it turns out, a lot of young men really just don't realize. They don't, you know, they haven't heard that, so they need, it helps them to build empathy, to try and understand that. So yeah, I've been exploring that in terms of a form of emotional labor, really, in terms of how we can open up more spaces to try and bring forth more positive gender cultures.
That's lovely that you mentioned, because I've been in the previous podcast, we've been discussing this idea of safe and unsafe spaces, mostly for women. And it's, I haven't heard much of that discussion regarding men. And what your paper mentions, it feels like I could have been reading this published right now. You know, it's it doesn't feel old. It doesn't feel dated. It feels like really contemporary. You know, women walking at night, or women going to a bar, or even women being alone. You know, and you can totally take that into a social media, and. I love here a quote from your paper that talks about women's bodies as as objects of desires, object of desire to other people, not the women's bodies don't belong to themselves, don't belong to women. They belong to men. And that's how we have to behave, right? Because if you're not at your place, or if you're at the wrong place, then it's your fault. And I think that's a responsibility that's society's responsibility as a whole. And we should be working towards changing that, right?
Yeah, I couldn't agree more, Anna. I mean, and what you said was really interesting, both in terms of the need to create, you know, spaces where everyone feels, you know, safe to, you know, for their bodily integrity, they can express their gender freely, you know, be that male, female, trans, non-binary, two-spirit, whatever. And the bodily integrity is always respected. But likewise, and I think it was interesting because that theme resonated very much for me with my research in terms of people working in this area of doing consent workshops, the idea that to create an effective, you know, space of social change for people to talk about these ideas, that has to be a safe space as well. And so lots of care taken into creating the kind of space where people will feel they can take time out if they need, if something is triggery, that you know, that people aren't going to feel judged, or that people aren't going to feel unsafe in any way. So yeah, important themes.
Yeah, totally. Well, thank you very much for being here with me. I really appreciate that you take this time to share your expertise, your knowledge. I highly recommend everyone to read your paper. I loved it. I read it like, I don't know, maybe 10 times. And every time I read it, I find something new. Yeah, I love it. I just love it.
Wow. Thank you. Well, I mean, like I say, thank you so much for reaching out. And it's been a pleasure to get to have this chat with you. And I'm very excited to hear about the podcast. And I'd love to follow it and see what more you do.
Great. Thank you, Kate.
Thank you. Have a good day. Bye-bye.